Welcome to Food Talk. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Teresa, and we're talking with the people who are growing, raising, harvesting, and producing food here in our bountiful coastal region.
And also to those who are selling, cooking, serving, and eating the freshest food available in our communities.
Join us today in a conversation about what's in season right now here on the North Coast. So today, I'm really going to enjoy this program because my co-host Kristen is going to move to the other side of the microphone and be one of our guests as we are talking with local master food preservers Jennifer Rasmussen, Renya Itzde, and Kristen Frost Albrecht. Welcome, everybody.
Hey, hello. So nice to be here.
It's really fun to have you be able to interview you because there is so much that is fascinating about you that our listeners probably don't know about. So I'd like everybody to just tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you ended up here on the Oregon coast. And maybe, Renya, let's start with you.
All right. Well, my name is Renya Itzde, and I grew up here in Astoria. Moved away for 10 years, came back, and I'm very happily living here for the rest of my life, as I see it. I work at Astoria High School with the Youth Transition Program, doing a lot of work with school gardens and different kids, getting out in the community a lot. I work for OSU Extension, doing nutrition education in the schools. And I also work for the North Coast Food Web, which is our local nonprofit, supporting the food system here in Clatsop County and our whole food shed area as the food systems coordinator. And that's a lot of fun.
That's a lot of fun, a lot of different jobs.
And they all kind of tie together, so it works really well.
I know. And Jen, maybe tell us a bit about yourself.
Sure. I grew up in Portland and moved to Astoria about 3.5 years ago and found my way into the gardening scene here, and am employed by OSU Extension now doing the nutrition education program primarily with elementary schools in a county.
Wonderful. And Kristen, maybe tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a lifelong Oregonian. I was raised in Hillsboro, Oregon, and moved out to the coast in 2002, I think. Although we've had a house out here since 1995, so I count as a longtime North Coast person. And I, too, work at OSU Extension. I work in the Family Community Health Department. I am the faculty for that. And I am so lucky to get to work with Renya and Jennifer. I love to come to work every day. And I actually started out getting involved in preserving and with food as a berry picker in Western Washington County. I picked berries for 8 years.
And how old are you when you started doing that?
I started that. This really ages me because it was before, I guess, child labor laws. 8 years old.
Wow. Yeah. So you would go out in the fields and pick berries?
I would. I was actually a pretty good berry picker. I could make more money doing that than I could babysitting.
Not bad.
Yeah. And I picked other things too. Green beans, gosh, cucumbers, which were really terrible because they're so heavy. but my all-time favorite is cane berries, you know, like boysenberries, marionberries, because they're big berries and there's no thorns and they just kind of like plop into your hallock that you're picking into or your flat. So those are really wonderful.
So wonderful skills to have. So that kind of brings me to one of the questions that I had that I wanted to ask all of you. And we're talking about food preservation today. And you think about things like canning and, you know, pickling and smoking and all those different ways of preserving foods. And they seem like they're sort of traditional things. Often we think about them as being skills that are passed down through families. Maybe you learned how to can from your mom or your grandmother or father or grandfather, depending on your family. But I know there's also a couple of generations that have really sort of missed those skills, and those things have not been passed down through families. I'm certainly from one of those families. This is not something that I ever learned about. I'm coming to it as an adult. So maybe tell us a little bit about, is this something that you guys learned growing up? Did you grow up canning and preserving fruit, or did you come to this as an adult? And maybe what interested you about it? So,
well, I know for me, I didn't grow up canning. I grew up going up to the islands in British Columbia every summer, and that's where I was exposed to, you know, food preservation in all ways, because my aunt and uncle were living off the grid on this awesome little island and hunting and fishing and growing things. And they had, you know, they had a little propane stove and the pressure canner was going all day during the later part of the summer with apples and berries and fish and all kinds of things. And so it always had this sort of air of wonderful mystery around it. I didn't learn to do it at that point, but it really set that seed of, oh, this is a great way to
do things. It's so cool and it's so delicious. And look at this whole room down in this basement full of these beautiful jars. And, you know, it was really fantastic. But so just in the last couple of years, that's been a goal of mine, is to learn how to do that and how to learn how to do that properly, and then learn how to teach people how to do that. Because, man, if you can do it, it's wonderful.
Yeah, that seems like a really great skill to have. What about you, Jen?
I did a little bit of canning growing up. Throughout my childhood, we would have one day every summer where it was jam day, and we'd get our big pots out, and it was the only time my mom and I wore aprons and got all cute in the kitchen. And my mom actually, we made 3-berry jam every year, and it was blackberries and boysenberries and marionberries that went into her jam, and she actually won first place for it one year. We have a blue ribbon on our kitchen wall at home.
Jam.
But that was the only thing I'd ever done, was just jam. So all of this just canning fruits and vegetables, this is all kind of a new realm for me too. Lots to learn there.
Wonderful. What about you, Kristen?
I definitely grew up preserving. My grandparents actually made everything. They ground their own wheat. They shot deer and elk and preserved their meat. They went out and foraged for berries. So I spent a childhood growing up foraging in Washington and Oregon, which was really great. Like Renya, it's a pretty special thing. You don't even realize it when it's happening. And then in my own home, we always had an enormous garden, and we put up everything. And I remember distinctly, probably in the 5th grade, thinking, I will never, ever do this. Because it's always done in the hottest days of the summer, mm-hmm. and you're over a hot stove stirring. And it seemed like my childhood flew by. Sometimes that part of it I wasn't so sure about. It was sure nice in the winter, but, you know, the actual doing of that on a hot day.
Yeah. But you are definitely a food preserver now, because I've had some of the amazing things that have come out of your kitchen, and I don't think there's anything that you won't try and preserve.
well, you know, funny how life is, isn't it? Yeah. That whole self-reliance thing is really great, but the reason I preserve is really because of quality.
Yeah.
I mean, there are just some things that you can preserve that you can't buy. You might have great friends who are preservers, and maybe they'll share with you. Mm-hmm. But I think the quality of what you can do when you preserve, if you use quality fruits, vegetables, meats, seafood, there's nothing like it, mm-hmm. truly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about the Master Food Preservers Program. This is something that's offered through OSU Extension. And is it like Master Gardeners? Maybe tell us about it. I mean, it's another one of these master programs. What happens?
Sure. So it's pretty similar to the Master Gardeners Program, as far as you go to, there was 8 weeks of classes, a full day every week. And then you're to give, where you learn all of the different techniques and safety tips and different ways of doing things. There's lecture time and lab time during class, and then you're expected to give back volunteer hours, much like the Master Gardeners mm-hmm. program.
And so this is a program that all of you have been through. And Kristen, this wasn't, you went through that this year, but this isn't the first time that you've taken the program.
No, actually, it wasn't being offered in Oregon when I took it. So I took it through Washington State Extension. And then Oregon started offering it, and Jen and Renya took it this past spring. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty intense program, I must say. I mean, it's very heavy on food safety, which is, again, an enormous part of preserving well, mm-hmm. is watching your food safety. And how many hours once you've passed the test, then is it 40 hours, I believe, that you give back?
Mm-hmm. Of volunteer time, mm-hmm. before you're sort of certified to...
Right, and people do it at the farmers markets, oftentimes, talking about, as they do with Master Gardeners. They might help with there's some really cool things going on in the preserving world. And I know in Washington they do a jam camp, a bread and jam camp. And they go out to a strawberry field farm area, and they actually make jam with kids and bake bread in outdoor ovens, which sounds like something maybe we could do here in Clatsop County and somebody like to
oven. Sounds like a really fun project. So I personally would love to go through the Master Food Preservers program. So what are the chances of something like that ever happening out here in Clatsop County now that we have three Master Food Preservers here in the area? Do you think that's something that can ever
be offered everybody
here?
Looking at me.
I know. Like, well, you don't need more stuff to do. But I know that there's a lot of people out there who would really love to take a program like this.
Well, if we can get funding for it, we would happily put this on. There's no question that we would love to do this, and there's so much interest in preserving. At the very least, we would like to be able to offer some preservation classes, canning classes. We already do a seafood canning class, which has been immensely popular, and we do a smoking seafood class, also quite popular.
And are those going to be offered again anytime soon?
Yes, we usually do these in tandem with Mark Whittem, our Sea Grant specialist, and he does a fabulous course, and we help organize it. And I think Renya, you've taken.
I was yes. a student there this spring. It is so fun. Yeah, you learn a lot, and it's really entertaining as well as very informative.
And part of our problem really is finding a kitchen where we can do this. That's always a little bit of the rub in all of this. We've done it in Seaside High School. They have a fabulous teaching kitchen there. And so that's a piece of this. We did the smoking seafood class in the seafood lab, actually, mm-hmm. which was really wonderful.
You've also offered a charcuterie class, too, once again. And charcuterie is a French word for sort of preserving meats and traditional preservation of meats. And tell us.
Yes, so that actually came out of OSU Small Farms program, the Niche Meat Marketing program by Lauren Gwynn. And she had received a grant to put a class on, and we were lucky enough to have it here. And our friends at EVO Cooking School offered up their kitchen. And so we had some expert meat people there, also focused on really the food safety end of things. Anytime you're talking about protein, preserving protein, you're really looking at the food safety aspects. So it was a fabulous all-day class, and I am hopeful that we could offer that again. We actually had to cut off the number of people who could be in the class. We were full up, and I probably had enough for two more classes.
Wow. So you've mentioned food safety a number of times, and I know that's something that we were talking a little bit about before the show. So let's talk about food safety. I mean, and I think a lot of where most people are going to experience this is in canning, home canning. And there are different methods to canning and preserving. There's what's called a water bath method, and then there's pressure cookers and stuff like that. And maybe can you guys talk a little bit about the different ways that you can things and what you would can different ways, and why is that important? What's the big deal? Why should I care?
All right. So the big deal is you should care because you'd be able to get very, very sick, and you can die if you don't.
That's a really good reason.
What I'm always terrified of is you could give it to somebody else and they could die or get very, very sick.
So what would kill me?
So the botulism would kill you.
Botulism.
And, you know, it's not something that happens very often, but on the West Coast here, we do have one of the highest incidences of botulism because of the soil that we have. So botulism is a little...
It's more present here.
It's a microorganism that lives in the soil. And
it gets onto food?
Mm-hmm.
And
is in food and fish and things.
And if you don't can something properly, the botulism can show up in what you've canned.
Right. And then you ingest it, and then it gets into you, and then you get very sick and can die.
So what are different ways that botulism can be prevented?
Well, the number one thing that you want to do is, if you're preserving anything by canning or... canning is the main one,
mm-hmm.
But smoking and pickling for sure. You want to have a recipe, and it needs to be a recipe that you get from a good source like OSU Extension or a university or somewhere where they've done the research and they have something that's proven scientifically that will kill all the bad guys in there. And you don't want to treat it like you would be cooking up a little stir fry or something. You can't really throw in extra things and invent stuff. You need to treat it.
You really need to follow
the directions to the letter and be very precise about it.
I don't mean to interrupt on a cliffhanger, but I know that we need to take a station break. Kristen, do you want to jump in and do that?
Okay. I'm back as your co-host here. If you are listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM, and streaming live at coastradio.org.
And if you're just joining us, we are talking with master food preservers Jennifer Rasmussen, Renia Itzde, and Kristen Frost Albrecht, my co-host and today's special guest. So we were just talking about some of the issues with food preservation and the concerns about botulism and following recipes correctly. And so I have heard that like high acid foods, you don't have to be as concerned about as low acid foods. Maybe can one of you speak to like what's a high acid food and what's a low acid food? Jen, do you want to jump in or?
Sure. Generally, it's most fruits are high acid.
So things with lots of sugars and stuff in
them? Right. Things with lots of sugar. So like apples, oranges, cherries, pears, your fruits, mm-hmm. berries, anything that like jams, anything that you add a lot of sugar to also is in that category mm-hmm. of safer, of more high mm-hmm. acid foods that you just need to use a water bath for. But
what about pickles as well?
And pickles too.
Things
yeah, because
vinegar
mm-hmm. right, vinegar or sugar, those are both really mm-hmm. pretty safe ways to go. But if you're just doing things like vegetables, like green beans or carrots or corn
or a tomato
peas,
sauce?
Tomatoes are like right on the line of a high acid. They're kind of a safe food, but mm-hmm. not always. So like if you're turning it into a salsa and add too many bell peppers or something, it could all of a sudden become a low acid food and then you're in trouble. So
okay.
tomatoes, you have to be really specific and like very certain that you're following the recipe with anything you do with tomatoes. But they normally qualify for a water bath canning.
And what's a water bath? Let me explain what that is.
Sure. So a water bath is just a giant pot on the stove that's full of boiling water. Usually you put a grate or something in the bottom so the your glass jars don't actually touch the bottom of the pan because that could cause cracking in your jars.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you've processed your you make whatever you're going to put in the cans, you put it in the can, clean the seal, put on the lid, and then you have to process those jars in the water bath for how many ever minutes your recipe tells you to process them for.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to take them out and let them cool and then enjoy them.
Yeah.
And so then the other type of canning is the pressure canning.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when you have to use a pressure canner and it gets all steamy inside of there. It gets to a much higher temperature than just your water bath, which the low acid foods need to kill all the bacteria and the botulism in there.
So what are things that you would process in a pressure canner that you would recommend to process in a pressure canner?
Pretty much any vegetable. I did beets a couple weeks ago in a pressure canner.
Mm-hmm.
They're a low acid food.
And things like fish
seafood.
If you're doing
right.
seafood or meat. I know
I
Jen, you're,
yeah, I know. Jen's our resident vegan, so we don't need to pressure her on this one.
Right. No, but if you were going to can your own fish or something like
totally.
that would also be in a pressure canner as mm-hmm. well. And now pressure canners are a pretty expensive piece of equipment, but OSU Extension has a pretty cool service. Maybe describe that.
They are. And just a note about pressure canners, I know a lot of people shop garage sales and pick up fabulous deals on pressure canners. I think there's something that a lot of people think, oh, I'll get into this, and then they end up in their basement, never to be used. And so I've heard some really amazing stories about excellent pressure canners that people have found for a dollar at a garage sale. But OSU Extension does have a pressure canner that you can borrow. I actually rent. It's $2 a day. I recommend calling far in advance. It's been a pretty busy pressure canner. It's in and out of the office a lot. And if you do have a pressure canner, you can come in and get your gauge checked. And that's a free service.
And that's really important. I mean, you definitely mm-hmm. need to make sure that the pressure canner is working to the correct pressure.
Absolutely.
Because if it's not, then you're not killing
right.
botulism.
Right.
And I know that before we were talking, you know, just I don't mean to be like scary person, although Halloween is coming up soon. But Renia was sharing with us a story. That, I mean, this is like something that people, you know, there's reasons to take this seriously. And maybe tell us a little about the story that you and Jen were just at a conference and a story was shared about, you know, why you want to be concerned about this.
Yeah. So botulism has always been around, you know. Mm-hmm. I think there's a plaque at Cloochie Creek for some travelers who died from bad beans
in the mid 1800s.
I have to go this plaque. Why is that at Cloochie Creek? That's so fascinating. But anyway,
it's been around forever, but it's still around. And though not very many people get it, sometimes it does crop up. And I was just hearing a story at this nutrition education program I was just at, where it was a little town in Oregon this summer. I'm not sure exactly where, but someone had put up some beets. And they'd used water bath instead of pressure canning, and they didn't have a recipe. They just sort of put them in a jar and boiled them for a while with the lid on. And, you know, the lid was nice and sealed, but they weren't processed correctly, and there was botulism in it. And they brought them to a barbecue where all their friends were, and some people had the beets, I think only about 3 people, and apparently they didn't taste very good, which is unusual. Usually you won't be able to taste anything bad in their botulism. You can't really tell
there's no smell or taste or anything.
You just, it's insidious like that. But so only a few people had it, but they all got botulism. And so they had to be life flighted to Portland, and they flew in the antitoxin right away. And they were all treated and recovered, but one guy ended up dying when he went home. So
it's something to really
take
seriously.
And so
I have another question for all of you guys about this. You know, I have some really cool cookbooks that come from England, and for whatever reason in England, they don't seem to take this like processing and water bath stuff as much as in American cookbooks. And a lot of times what's recommended, they'll either, if it's a jam or something, they say to put it in the jars and, you know, seal it and then use within a year, or they'll sometimes recommend to do like a melted paraffin seal on it. So if I want to be super careful, can I still follow that recipe but just process it in a water bath, or should I just not use any of those recipes? I mean, I know I'm putting you guys on the spot, because probably from a master food preserver's point of view, you have to say no, you shouldn't follow that recipe, right?
Well, actually, I think we would make some recommendations to always follow recipes from the latest science. Mm-hmm. And I can actually tell you some books that we certainly recommend to people, because we know that all of these recipes have been tested. And I personally can't think of anything worse than preparing something, preserving something, giving it for a gift, and having it be bad. I mean, yeah. It's just like the
it's
worst.
So scary.
It's the worst thing. So I'm pretty picky about that.
Yeah.
And so I'm just going to mention the USDA's Complete Guide to Home Canning. And they come out with a new edition every few years, so you should always make sure. You can actually access all of this online. And I'm an experienced canner, but every time we process, I look this up again. I mean, mm-hmm. I just like
to make sure.
Yeah, I'm really careful, and it is a science, and I think you have to be careful. It's I'm the sort of cook that likes to put in a little dash of this and a little dash of that. I don't do that with my preserving.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is So Easy to Preserve from the Cooperative Extension, the University of Georgia. It's a fabulous book. There's some really great creative recipes in there that have been tested. And I really also like the Ball Blue Book, Guide to Preserving. It's another wonderful one. And the fermentation book that I'm really fond of, which is
Wild
little
fermentation.
I love that book.
Yeah,
that's Sander Katz.
Yeah, that's a really good book too. And fermentation is a totally different process than
mm-hmm.
canning. You're not doing a water bath. You're mm-hmm. fermenting food, which is a different thing.
Very different sort of thing. And
which would be more like sauerkraut is a fermented food, right?
Yeah.
Or kimchi. And I know some people ferment pickles. I had some fermented pickles recently that were awesome.
So
they
good.
Were really good. Colby, yeah. If you're listening, your pickles were fantastic. I really liked those. So, you know, and just thinking about like great recipes and things that we love, maybe like tell me a little bit about what's one of the favorite things that you've done food preservation in the food preservation world. What's something that you like to preserve, or how do you like to preserve it?
One of my favorite ways of preserving is actually something we haven't touched on either, which is dehydrating food.
Uh-huh.
My food dehydrator has been on the counter all summer long, busy with lots of different things. We've done all sorts of different stone fruits lately. Mm-hmm. We have peaches and plums and pluots in there all the time, and they just all turn out fabulously.
You just cut them up? And
sure, with those we just slice them and put them in. We don't do any sort of sometimes they'll recommend like a lemon juice dip or a citric acid dip to preserve color. But
you don't have to do that. It's not a safety issue.
No, and we also tend to eat them really quick after they're done.
So good.
They don't last very long anyways. And then kale.
But if you did want to keep them longer, would you put them in jars or?
Yeah, then you would put mm-hmm. them in jars, and you want to keep them out of the sunlight and mm-hmm. and in a cool, dark place.
Mm-hmm. So you're also dehydrating kale?
Right, dehydrating kale. I make kale chips a couple times a week, generally, in the dehydrator.
Mm-hmm. And what do you put on them? They are so delicious.
I try different kinds of sauces. My favorite, though, is a lemon tahini dressing.
And then you just put it in the dehydrator?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just toss it like a salad and then toss the kale right into the dehydrator. Okay. And it turns out so crispy and delicious.
Okay. That's nice. I know what I'm going to be doing this weekend. Okay, what about you, Renya?
I really, really love freezing things.
Uh-huh. And freezing is great, yeah.
This is where I was also going to say that if you do have recipes that you really love that are from some ancient English book that your grandmother passed down, and they don't have water bath or pressure canning and you're not sure about it, you can always make those things and put them in containers and freeze them and just take them out and use them as you need. And that's totally safe. Freezing super, super safe, and it also
as
solves
long as you
the problem.
And keeping it in the fridge and then when it's open.
Right, yeah. So you open it up, keep it in the fridge, and then use it like that. Which works really well if you have a big chest freezer. And I know when I was in Spain, they just had this big chest freezer that was actually super efficient, and that's how they did a lot of stuff.
Wow.
But I also like it because, as Kristen was saying, as a child slaving over the hot stove, what you can do is you can get a whole bunch of produce at its peak and then freeze it properly. And there are all sorts of different methods to mm-hmm. preserve quality when you freeze things. And then pull it out in the middle of the winter when you really would love to be over a hot stove and, you know, do all your canning then. And I like it because, you know, you can do all your fish and all your berries. And
nice.
It's very quick.
What about you, Kristen?
You know, the one thing that we do every year is we put up our own tuna in our and can our salmon. And I have to say, it is unlike anything else. I mean, I know for a fact that that is like the best ever. It's so good. And right here on the coast, I mean, we have the best available. Mm-hmm. So tuna canning's happening right now. That's what most people are doing.
Yeah.
And it's pretty wonderful. The other thing that I always do, like Jen, I love our dehydrator, and we do tomatoes, Borghese tomatoes, which are
the Principe Borghese. Those are so great as dried tomatoes. Yeah,
they are so good, and we use those all winter long. It's just mm-hmm. like getting this burst of sunshine.
Yeah.
So those are our special things we like.
Well, we have raced through a half hour of food talk. It's been a fascinating program, and there's so much to talk about on this subject. If people have more questions about the food preserver program, do you want to?
Yeah, so I'm just, if you're out there and you're canning and you have some questions, I just want to mention that the OSU Extension Service has a food safety preservation hotline. It is 1-800-354-7319. And again, that's 1-800-354-7319. And it is manned by master food preservers, and they can answer every question, I am quite sure. So,
well, I hope people are having fun putting up the bounty. I want to really thank my guests, Renya, Jen, and Kristen. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you to Mark Albrecht, our sound engineer, and to Luke and Katie for our theme song. And
this show will be available as a podcast on coastradio.org.
Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks so much. Bye bye.
Comes from